presenting Orson Welles as The Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Now, right from the very outset, friends, I want it clearly understood that I do not believe in Santa Claus. If a man offers to sell me a gold brick, I do not reach for my billfold, except to make sure I still have it. Nevertheless, when I sat down in the bar of the George V in Paris not so long ago, I'd have sworn I'd met Santa Claus at last. Nor did he offer me fool's gold. What he offered was the real thing. Gold. From fools.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, in today's story, Fool's Gold.
It began, as I told you, in the bar of the George V in Paris. Ironically, I hadn't even wanted to meet the man. I hadn't wanted to see him at all when he called to make the appointment. I was even rude to him.
So, Monsieur Lime... Your health.
A la vote.
Perhaps if I came quickly to the point.
Good, I hope you do.
As you know, Monsieur, gold as a commodity is worth 35 American dollars the troy ounce on the controlled market.
Naturally.
Unfortunately, it can be disposed of at far greater prices in the Orient. As high as $60 the troy ounce will be paid in Karachi or Goa or Bombay or Macau or Hong Kong.
That's all very, very interesting.
Please.
But,
I will make myself clear in a moment.
I hope so.
Let me suggest, Monsieur, that there are at least three West European governments which would be happy if they could purchase more gold at the regulated price.
Well, they'd sleep better at night, would they?
Precisely. But if those who mine the gold in South Africa, in South America, and elsewhere, if they can dispose of their products for more, why should they sell it in Europe? Not to keep secrets from you, Monsieur Lime, there is a shocking condition. One blushes to report it. Gold is being smuggled east.
Smuggled?
East through Beirut and the Persian Gulf, east to India and Hong Kong.
What some people will do for money.
It is, as you suggest, a distressing practice.
Yes.
As you can imagine, there are certain European governments which would look very kindly on any efforts to halt the smuggling.
Mm.
If, for instance, the smugglers were made to realize that the enterprise was a very risky one. If they were to discover that occasionally their shipments did not get through to India as planned.
Well, my dear sir, you're suggesting that I hijack these smuggled gold shipments? And besides, how could it be done?
Oh, very easily. You see, the usual route for the smugglers is from Beirut by chartered plane to a small sheikdom on the Persian Gulf called Kuwait.
Hmm.
Here the gold is dumped out on the sand. No armed guards. The sheikhs in Kuwait presently have it carried to small craft, dhows, in the harbor. And thence it is sailed east to Karachi or Goa, Macau.
No armed guards?
Ridiculous.
I see. Well, my friend, I'm afraid your little ideas...
Monsieur Lai, perhaps you have not understood me. If anything should happen to a shipment of the smuggled gold, it would be understood that all money the gold brings in the Indian market would belong to the man responsible for any accidents to the smuggled shipment.
Yeah? All the proceeds?
All.
Just where exactly is this sheikdom of Kuwait? Now, here we was an undertaking designed to my own personal specifications. All the way to Beirut, I purred in my aeroplane seat like a tabby being presented with a bowl of clotted Devonshire cream. And in Beirut, I made allies with two likely specimens. One was called Clancy, a rascally Irish aeroplane pilot, and the second, Singh, an equally rascally Lascar sailor, both of them familiar with Kuwait. I remember both of you. From now on, I am Dr. Harrington Lyme, FRCS, well-known archaeologist, right?
Whatever you say,
now, Singh, you leave at once for Kuwait and hire a dhow. Clancy here and I'll give you a head start. Then we fly to the airport, where we'll have to land because of engine trouble. I am an archaeologist looking for likely ruins to dig up. Clancy, you'll not be able to fix our engine until the moment there's a big shipment of gold lying on the sand by the airport.
This begins to sound interesting.
At that point, you tell me the engine is all right again. I arrive, change inside the plane to the clothes of a native. Singh drives a cart up, and he and I load the gold shipment into the cart, drive it down to the docks, dump it into the dhow, and sail 100 miles down the Gulf.
Where I meet you with the plane.
Right. We fly on to Karachi and sell it.
Why not?
And a quarter share for each of you fellas when it's sold in Karachi, right? The grapevine had news of a rich, fat shipment of gold due into Beirut in a matter of days. We gave Singh a head start, time to get us the dhow and get it ready. And then Clancy and I took off for Kuwait. 5.5 hours. Across the deserts and mountains of the Middle East. Then our C-43 was circling above an airfield. Can you make your motor miss, Clancy? Make the landing look good and necessary?
Right.
Heat reached up and met us, swallowed us. Clancy went away to report his engine trouble and ask for parking space, but he's back in a few minutes.
Hey, Harry. Plane due in tomorrow with a consignment for the Sheikh Sir Sulayman Alhamad bin Taimur.
Well, so what?
I know him, that's what. He's the biggest man in the gold business here in Kuwait. It must be the shipment we heard about back in Beirut, don't you see?
And tomorrow, huh? Well, we'll have to work fast. And this heat, too. You stay here and fuss with the plane. I'll get into town, buy some native clothes, and contact Singh.
You got the name of that waterfront place you're staying at?
Don't worry about me. Well, if it was hot on the airfield, in the town, in the native bazaar where I went to buy my second-hand native clothes, it broiled and sizzled. Even down at the waterfront where I looked up Singh, the breeze off the Gulf didn't relieve the torment. Singh was already. Then back to the town's best hotel, carrying my package of clothes. The town's best was a glum hostelry with a villainous-looking clerk. I handed him my card, the one I had specially printed, describing myself as an archaeologist. Who better to pass the word around about me than this clerk?
Yes, sir, Dr. Lyme. You want rooms, fine suit, running water, hot and cold, cross-ventilating.
Cross-ventilating.
Very fine suits. Sign here, please.
I leaned down, signed my name, and then straightened again, glancing over my shoulder. And that was when I saw her.
Luggages, sir. You have luggages, no doubtless?
Our eyes met. She stood quite still, grave, returning my look.
Dr. Lyme, where are your luggages, sir? Just only this bundle?
That woman, who is she, old man?
Nice, isn't it?
Very
that
nice.
Is Falura. Falura, she is a dancer.
Falura? It would have been pleasant, but then I thought of the gold of the day's work ahead, and I turned toward the elevators. But just before I reached them, she was at my side.
After looking at me the way you did just now, you turn and leave?
Your name is Falura, isn't it? Well... Why are you here in Kuwait?
I've been waiting, perhaps, for you.
Well, you're staying here at this hotel? I'll call for you this evening.
Not this evening. This evening I am engaged. But I shall see you tomorrow evening.
Well, it's too late. I'll be gone. I'm sorry.
So, I think you will wait for me.
She turned and walked away. She didn't look back. I watched while she went out and down the steps and into a limousine that was waiting at the door. That was too bad. That meant for the gold that would lie waiting on the airfield beside the strip tomorrow morning.
Dr. Lyme, sir.
Oh, it's you. Well, what do you want?
An invitation has come for you, sir. The Sheikh throws big party tonight.
Oh, Sheikh? What? Who is this Sheikh?
Well, Sheikh Sir Sulayman Alhamad bin Taimur.
Sheikh Sir Sulayman.
This invitation says be ready outside hotel at 9, Dr. Lyme. His car will meet you up and carry you.
Well, the Sheikh's limousine deposited me at the entrance of an elegant and palatial residence in the hills above the harbor. The man at the door took my hat. Inside, I was left to my own devices, looking about for my host, when suddenly I discovered why it was that Falura had said she could not see me on this night. She was here. She saw me and moved over.
I am happy you were able to come. Now you know why I could not be alone with you tonight.
You're dancing here tonight?
Later. And while you're watching me, remember, tomorrow night we will be together.
Well, now, really, Falura, I'm afraid that won't be possible. You see,
At first, I thought you were an English lord when I saw you back at the hotel.
Well, I'm not.
Now I have learned that you are only a scientist. What is it?
Archaeologist.
Archaeologist, yes.
Archaeologist. Now, about tomorrow night, believe me, Falura, I couldn't be sorrier, but...
Excuse me, Dr. Lyme, the Sheikh, Sir Suleiman, he would meet you.
You are wrong to worry, handsome one. If Falura does not worry about your poverty... Why should you?
Well,
Now, go. Talk about your science with the Sheikh.
Yes, the Sheikh, Sir Suleiman.
My science with the Sheikh? Why with the Sheikh? What do you mean?
You didn't know that the Sheikh is one of the most passionate amateur archaeologists in this part of the world?
Amateur archaeologist?
But what is the matter?
Well, certainly my head. I've got a splitting headache, Falura.
Sir Lyon, please, the Sheikh awaits you.
Yes, but I've got this headache. Of course, I know he does, but you'll just simply have to take apologies. My apologies to the Sheikh. It's the heat. Which way is the door?
My handsome one, go quickly home. Be good to yourself.
Oh, I will, dear.
Until tomorrow, in the cool of the evening.
But it wasn't in the cool of the evening when I saw Falura again. It was in the heat of the morning, just as I was checking out of the hotel, and when I had only gold on my mind.
Where do you go so early, handsome one?
Well, I'm leaving, Falura. I'm leaving Kuwait.
It is not possible.
Well, I tried to tell you. Twice I tried to tell you that I simply have to leave today by plane for India.
Then I go with you.
Falura, my lovely Arabian moonflower, listen to me.
Oh, the first pretty thing you have said to me. I shall treasure it.
Well, go right ahead and treasure it, honey. But now, goodbye. You're not coming with me. I'm going alone. Goodbye.
No, wait. Is it my same handsome one? Can it...
Well, you're not coming to the airport with me, Falura.
Not even to kiss you goodbye? Can you refuse? Say, au revoir.
Okay, and also, goodbye.
In a moment, Orson Welles returns as Harry Lime, the third man. And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, continues in today's story, Fool's Gold.
Falura was certainly beautiful, but beautiful or not, Falura had begun to get on my nerves. Nothing could have been worse than to have her around the way she was, waving to me. Just when I was busy slipping into my native clothes and signaling to Singh to approach with his card and... slipping back out of the plane again, hoping that no one in the control tower had noticed, making my way with Singh to the crates that lay unguarded and defenseless, ripe for the plucking, under the broiling sun.
Oh, they're heavy, Harry.
Well, don't complain of their weight, old man. Remember, the heavier they are, the richer we shall be. Anyone around?
No one. This heat, not even a mad dog, my friend. Certainly no Englishman.
Then into the cart with these crates. The guards were with us. Why should anyone stop two native Arabs from loading crates into a native cart? What could be more brazen and therefore seem more innocent?
Go on, you lazy devil! My luck!
Miller!
Off the airfield, with Singh laying his whip across the backs of the two plodding, sweating beasts into the town and then down toward the docks. By mid-afternoon, we were out in the Persian Gulf. Out and away and cool. And so far as I could see, utterly unsuspected. For the airport officials knew that Dr. Harrington Lime had flown off at 1 o'clock bound for India. And they never guessed that his plane, only 200 miles out of Kuwait, would put down, refuel, and be loaded with a heavy and priceless cargo before heading in earnest for India.
I feel better now. Almost weren't airborne back there. That's too heavy a load for safe flying, Harry.
You too, Clancy. You too.
Me too what?
Well, like citizens saying back there, you complain of the weight of our payload? Suppose, Clancy, just suppose that we finally were able to tuck inside the plane weighs half a ton. How much would you say it'd be worth?
Half a ton of gold? How should I know, Harry?
Your guess, saying.
$50,000? $100,000?
At Indian prices, we might get enough to buy 1 million American dollars, my pessimistic papoose.
That's much.
We'll see when we find our buyer in Karachi.
Why not in Goa, Harry? I heard of a man in Goa, a Portuguese named Peranda, who buys gold.
Karachi. Karachi, Clancy. When we find a buyer in Karachi, that's what I said. When is what I said, but if was what I was thinking. Would it be so easy to sell a half ton of fine gold? I didn't know. Never sold a half ton of gold before. I could only guess. But before I left Europe, I'd taken the name of an Indian merchant in Karachi who could be approached. Okay, Clancy? Everything clear?
Sure pop, Harry.
I just want to visit this guy first and make sure he's the man for us. I should be back inside an hour. Don't let anyone near the plane.
Trust me, Dr. Lime.
I will, old man. And I did. I did trust him, and that's where I made my mistake. Took me an hour to find my merchant in the city, 10 minutes to find that I had a man who'd make a quick and profitable deal, and half an hour to get back to the airport, all singing, all talking, all dancing.
You, Dr. Harry Lyon?
That's right.
This note's for you.
Note? Note from whom?
From a pilot named Clancy. He left it just before he took off.
Before he took off?
Yeah, he took off about 20 minutes ago. Said you might be looking for him. Here's the note.
Harry. Thing and I decided, what's the use of 25% for each of us? We decided 50% for each of us is twice as nice. You can see that, can't you? Think. Clancy had urged me to fly not to Karachi, but to Goa. Goa, he'd said. He knew a man in Goa who'd buy the gold, a Portuguese called... what? Blindly, I made my way through the groups of tourists and travelers in the airport terminal building. How long would it take Clancy to fly to Goa? He had a 20-minute start. I had to charter a faster plane. I must think. Now, what was that Portuguese's name? Where can I...
Dr. Lime! Oh, my handsome one, I've found you again.
Oh.
Harry, I shall call you Harry.
Now, listen, Fuller, I'm really very busy. I haven't got time for...
After you had left me, I thought, handsome one.
Peranda, that's it, that's the name.
What? Whose name?
Peranda.
Where are you going? Harry!
Peranda. Hurrying through the terminal, I headed for the office of an airline's dispatcher. Peranda, that's
Harry,
the name. Maybe, I thought, maybe this dancer could be helpful. Suppose I got into a language difficulty. Fallura!
Yes?
I've got to charter a plane to Goa. It's a business matter of great urgency. A fast plane. The very fastest sort of plane.
I will come with you.
Well, all right. If you insist, I guess, but...
Come. We will charter the fastest plane in all Karachi, and Kamadeva shall be our pilot.
Kamadeva?
In this land, Kamadeva is the god of love.
Fallura jabbered a few rapid sentences of Arabic to a dispatcher, then to a radio operator, and a tricep plane had appeared, and we climbed in. More than 800 miles down the west coast of India lies Goa, capital of Portuguese India. Say Clancy and Singh had an hour's head start. It couldn't take less than 5 hours, and the plane we chartered was guaranteed to get us there in 4. I had a chance. All I'd have to do would be to get rid of Falura, pay off the pilot, and find the offices of this guy, Piranda. Luck was back with me again. 4 hours, and we were circling down over the ancient city of Goa. I raced from the landing strip to the administration building. I wanted a taxi. I figured I could brush Falura off as soon as I could find a taxi. A taxi, hi, a taxi!
I beg your pardon, but aren't you Dr. Harry Lyme?
Well, yes.
Harry, where are you going?
Professor Lyme, is it not? The well-known archaeologist.
Oh, yes, but I really must apologize, old man. Taxi! I'm in a terrible hurry right now, you see. Taxi!
I can't tell you how I've longed to meet you, Professor. You see, I dabble a bit in archaeology myself.
Taxi! Taxi! Taxi pulled up.
Perhaps you will be good enough to permit me to accompany you to the hotel, Professor.
I had no time to stand on ceremony. I pushed this archaeological crank out of my way and jumped into the cab. Driver, take me to Piranda's, do you hear?
Harry, don't leave me.
You know where it is, Piranda's?
Si, Piranda's, si,
wait,
senor.
Wait, Harry, what about me?
But, Professor,
what about
wait.
Me?
I was cutting it fine. It took my driver a half hour to find Piranda's. What if those thieving scoundrels had beaten me, after all? But just as the taxi was turning into the street, I relaxed. There they both were, Clancy and Sane, standing on the sidewalk outside the shop, supervising the unloading of the crates.
Gently, boys, gently.
Yes, gently, gently, boys. Harry! Hey, you boys have rather inconvenienced me. Please, Clancy, don't reach for your pocket. As you may notice, my hand is already in my pocket. It isn't my pipe stem that is pointing at you. That's better. You may proceed with the unloading of my crates.
But, Harry, listen.
I know. You were just joking, just joking. Nevertheless, the penalty for practical jokes is severe. When my profits are involved...
Harry! You see? He's stopping them.
Yes, I guess you're right, my dear. I guess he is a fellow archaeologist.
A fellow what?
Certainly he is, Sir Suleiman.
Oh, what's this, Sir Suleiman?
Why, I thought you knew him, handsome one. This is the Sheikh Sir Suleiman Al-Hamid Beltimo.
Delighted, Professor. Oh. I had been looking forward to a chat the other evening, except that you were suddenly taken ill, I understand.
Yes, Sir Suleiman, I...
And I must say, I'm most grateful for all your efforts at halting these brigands. You'll forgive me for a time. I actually thought you were part of the plot to hijack my gold.
Yeah, and don't think you were.
Quiet. Yes, Sir Sullivan, you were saying?
Yes. Well, Valura here insisted that her heart had never told her a lie, that her heart told her you were honest.
Oh, that's very good of Valura.
Actually, my dear Professor, your melodramatic chase was unnecessary.
Oh?
Yes, indeed. As soon as you told Valura back in Karachi that the name was Piranda, she found the opportunity to ask Karachi radio operator to send me the information. I was at the time flying from Kuwait, and naturally I radioed ahead to my good friend Piranda.
Your friend?
We've often done business together in the past. And he arranged to have some Goa police inside his place of business.
Police? What?
They're ready to take these two thieves in charge right now, I believe.
Aye!
Now look here, Harry.
And a very good thing, too,
oh,
I must
Harry,
say.
Does it not turn out well?
You're not getting away with this crime.
All right now, my men. Just move along inside the shop, please. Oh, by the way.
Yes?
Please accept this. A small reward for your friendly intervention.
Oh, no, Sir Solomon, I couldn't really.
No, I insist.
It's awfully good of you.
Here, Valura, you make him take it.
Well?
Professor, you perhaps don't realize how valuable a shipment this was that you saved.
Oh, really?
I'll see you in a few moments.
We'll wait, Sir Solomon.
Valura.
Yes, handsome one, come. We will see if there is a bank open which will cash the Sheikh's check. You see the reward for honesty, handsome one.
Yes, a slender return on investment, but a reward. Come, Moonflower.
Harry Lyme returns in just a moment.
Thank you.
And now, Harry Lime.
Well, I told you at the beginning of this story that I don't believe in Santa Claus. Well, after all, nobody ever left a gold brick in my sock. Unless it was there to sock me over the head. No, diamonds may be a girl's best friend, but Harry Lime's best friend is still... Well, guess who? Yes, you're right. Harry Lime.